Okay, last week we learned most of Melachim Aleph Perek Yod Daled, which focused on Yeravam, and how Yeravam's son is ill, and they decide to have his wife go and disguise herself and go to the Navi Achiyah, and the Navi Achiyah says, by the way, kingdom is over, sorry, end. Right, that was last week. Now, one of the interesting things about Sefer Melachim is that we go back and forth between the kings of Yehuda and the kings of Yisrael. So now we're going back to the king of Yehuda, we're going back to Rechavam. So tonight what I'd like to do with you is just discuss a bit about Rechavam. It's only like 11 psukim here in Melachim, but in Divrei Hayamim there's much more. And we'll try to focus on the episode of Rechavam to the best of our ability. Let's just go through the Pesukim. Right? So Rechavam, the son of Shlomo, is the king in Yehuda. He is 41 years old when he becomes the king. He reigns for 17 years in the city that God chose to place his name, Mikol Shevtei Yisrael, and his mother's name was Na'amah Ha'amonit. Now, this is, besides the fact that your composition teacher would fail you for writing a sentence like this, right? Isn't this like 10 different clauses or so mixed into one sentence? And more problematic is, there is a formula that we have throughout Sefer Melachim about kings. The formula says so-and-so was king, he was this and this age when he became king, he ruled for this and this amount of time, and if it's a king of Yehuda, for some reason, the mother's name is mentioned. By kings of Yisrael, the mother's name is not mentioned. So all of that is standard. The problem that we have in this pasuk is that the Navi goes out of his way to say something about that he is the king in the city that God chose to reign, the city that he chose among all the other places of Klal Yisrael. So why on earth is this added? Why is it that we add this whole clause, I should say, about Yerushalayim? So it makes Obamas even more egregious, and more fundamentally,
shows why his line can't continue.
Well, Rechavam's line will continue. Rechavam is going to make it. But I think the issue over here is that the contrast between Yeravam and Rechavam is precisely not about their personalities as much as it's about where they are. You see, Chazal say that we'll have to talk about Rechavam and whether he was a good guy or a bad guy. That's not going to be abundantly clear. But the real difference between Yeravam and Rechavam is that Rechavam has Yerushalayim, and Yeravam established his own places to serve God. And assuming that they're serving Hashem in Dan and Beit El, but that's the major difference. The major difference between them is, at least the way Sefer Melachim presents it, the major difference between them is where is the city? And on a certain level, and actually Reb Velvel Soloveitchik, the Rav's uncle, had this point, that the connection that we have in benching always between Yerushalayim and Malchus Beis David, right, there is a certain connection, which is that God chose a place, and God chose a line. And when God chooses you, it remains, even if you mess up. God chose you. There is something about Yerushalayim that Hashem chose, and Rechavam, in some ways, is a beneficiary of the fact that he's part of the good family, the family that was chosen. Here, let's just continue in these psukim. We'll come back to this first pasuk in a few minutes. Vayas Yehuda harabeinei Hashem, they do bad, and they got Hashem angry because of everything that they did with their sins that they sinned. Now, who's Yehuda? Vayas Yehuda hara. Judah did bad. It's probably not Judah the person. Somehow a lot of the kids in Shul named Judah. Did you notice that? I don't know. But it's
The tribe,
the people. Yeah. This might be a difference between Yisrael and Yehuda. When it comes to Yeravam and Malchus Yisrael, the sins were, so to speak, top down. The king instigated them to sin. When it comes to Rechavam, Vayas Yehuda harabe inei Hashem. The people did it bad. Now, the king doesn't get off scot-free. Obviously, the king is responsible to make sure that the people do what they keep mitzvahs properly. But it's not as bad, right, if the people are doing it rather than the king leading them to do it. Pasuk Chav Gimel, another mitigating factor. Vayivnu gam heim alahem bamosu matzevos v'asherim al kol givha gvoha v'tachas ko itra anan. They also build bamos. They build altars that are not the official altar, matzevos. They build a matzeva is technically different than a mizbeach. No, mizbeach has many stones, a matzeva is one stone. But that's all that, they're building all these things, and they have asherim, which sounds like avodah zarah trees, on every high point, etc. Okay, so this is pretty bad, they're serving avodah zarah. Is there any mitigating factor in this pasuk?
Gam
heima. What's the gam?
The previous generation is also, or perhaps Yisrael.
Okay, so the previous generation, or its imitation of Yisrael. Remember, Chazal said, the reason why Yeravim is so bad is he's choteh umachti asarabim. What Yeravim does is he gets people to sin. Right? The people in Yisrael sinned. And the people in Yehuda imitated what the people in Yisrael were doing. So there's a certain mitigating factor, etc. Now, Pasuk Chav Dalad, v'gam kadesh haya ba'aretz, asuch ikah hatoavos hagoyim asher horish Hashem b'pnei bnei Yisrael. There's also kadesh. What is kadesh?
Prostitutes.
What type of prostitutes?
Male prostitutes,
specifically. So over here, the English translation actually has sodomites in the land. Specifically, without being too graphic about this, but a kadesh is a temple prostitute. You see, if I want to experience a high, I want to connect to God, and I want to really feel like... So my father tells a story that like when he went to Israel in 48, 49 to learn, so my grandfather told him he should try to connect to different gedolim. So he went to the Chazon Ish one time. He tried to go to Bnei Brak. Now, mind you, this means that my father is leaving this... what yeshiva was he in? He was in... I forgot, he was in the Zionistic yeshiva, he was in a religious Zionist school, and he's going to travel to the Chazon Ish in Bnei Brak. Okay, fine. And getting to Bnei Brak wasn't so easy, and he gets there and he feels like this is a spiritual high, this is amazing. He never felt like so holy in his whole life. He gets back to his school, and he has like a fever of around 103, and they have to send him, because, you know, there's certain things that, like, you know, when you're all high, right, you can feel, oh wow, this is spiritual, this is amazing. Now, there is something that people can connect physical highs and delirium to spiritual highs. Right? There is something about that. And a temple prostitute on a certain level is serving that. When you feel a certain sexual high, right, people can translate that feeling to the feeling of heightened spirituality. And that is... Right, so that's precisely the problem.
Yeah.
You see, you're supposed to feel spirituality, right? First of all, spiritual highs don't come easily, right? It takes time to build. But the reason why they had temple prostitutes is precisely to do this type of exchange idea. And people are going to... It's like getting 103 fever. You think, oh, this is awesome, right? But really, you're... Right? Not experiencing the spiritual high. Yeah.
But what you have, the worship is in the bombers, and the sex is in the temple. It's just the reverse of...
So, kadesh means a prostitute who is used for a ritual purpose.
In the temple.
In the temple, or wherever it was part of a cult of prostitution is connected. Now, by the way, Chazal say that the only reason why the Jewish people worshipped Avodah Zarah is in order to hatir lahem es ha'arayos. Chazal say that the real goal of Avodah Zarah in some ways is not as enticing as arayos. Right? The reason why... So it could be this is part of the discussion. There are kadeshes in the land, which is pretty bad, and they're using it for the avodah zarah, again, to establish this high, like we mentioned. So far, so good? Now, the pasuk then continues. There's no direct linkage here, but it says in the fifth year of Rechavam, King Shishak of Mitzrayim approaches Yerushalayim, and he takes the treasure houses of the Beis HaMikdash and the treasure houses of the king. He takes everything, and he takes the golden shields that Shlomo made. And Rechavam, instead of the golden shields, Pasuk Chav Zayin, makes copper shields. And he gives the copper shields to the captains to guard near the king's house. And whenever the king went to the Beis HaMikdash, he had certain guards who would carry these shields and then return them afterwards. So this is really, it's almost a farce. They had golden shields that Shlomo made. What did the golden shield, really?
Wouldn't golden shields just be representative? Because gold is much more malleable.
So gold is not a good thing to make a shield out of. The golden shields that Shlomo made were probably simply a sign of excess opulence. I am so rich, and I am not really fighting wars. Remember, Shlomo doesn't fight wars. So, you know what? I have a shield, but it's a representative. It's an art form. It's not functional. Rechavam has functional shields. A copper shield is functional, no? But Rechavam is taking these functional shields, and he's keeping them under lock and key. Now, this is a little strange. If I have a functional shield, if I'm worried I'm going to be attacked, so keep them in a place where you can access them. You don't put them in a museum. And he takes them out whenever he goes to pray in the Beis HaMikdash also. Which is very striking. So now, it's not clear what's going on here, and when we'll read the Pesukim in Divrei HaYomim, we'll try to get a better sense. But apparently what happened is, and the Pesukim in Divrei HaYomim clarify this, that Rechavam felt that something was wrong with Shlomo and his golden shields. That's why they were taken. So there's a certain type of tshuva that he's doing with the copper shields. And because it's a real tshuva process, he takes them whenever he goes to pray. We'll elaborate on this point a little bit later. But this is the end of Rechavam, right? The rest of Rechavam is written in the history books. Obviously, this is not the history book. There's a war between Rechavam and Yeravam. Rechavam dies. Rechavam is buried. Once again, his mother is Naamah HaAmonis. We'll talk about that in a second. And Aviyam takes over for Rechavam. So this is all we have about Rechavam here. It's like 10 psukim. And the one real episode is this shield that's taken by Shishak, the king of Egypt. Now, I just want to return to the first pasuk, which connects to the last pasuk. The mother is named Naamah HaAmonis. What does that tell? What's that about? Rechavam's mother is Naamah HaAmonis. So, if you remember, Shlomo had a bunch of wives, and these wives led Shlomo astray. They worshipped idols, and Shlomo didn't stop them. One of them is Naamah HaAmonis. The Radak over here comments, the Malbim comments, that the idea is that Rechavam is led astray by his mother. So far, so good? Now, you get the impression from this episode that Rechavam is not such a good guy. Right? Rechavam, basically, the one thing we know about him is that the shields are taken. Again, we had the episode earlier that right after Yeravam declared himself king. So Rechavam prepares to fight against Yeravam, and the Navi tells Rechavam not to. So that sounded somewhat positive. But at least over here, we see only negative stuff about Rechavam. I think that's the presentation. And the source of that negativity is his mother, Naamah HaAmonis, and it's repeated to emphasize it. Now some, however, comment. There's a Gemara Bava Kamma that sounds like that Naamah HaAmonis was not so bad. The Gemara says that Shtei Predos Tovos, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, Al Totzer Es Moav, don't attack Moav, don't attack Ammon. Why? because I have two good pigeons that will emerge from Moav and Ammon. The two good pigeons, I have no idea why they're called pigeons. One of them is Rusa Moavia, she was good. And the other is Namaha Ammonis, who also apparently is good, according to that Gemara. So, according to that Gemara, Bava Kama Lama Ches, it can't be that the source of all evil is Namaha Ammonis, because Nama herself is good. The repetition of how come this is the only king about whom his mother is mentioned twice, the reason why the mother is mentioned twice might be that Rechavam died while his mother is still alive. That is like one of the most painful things in the world. To lose a child is indescribably painful. And maybe the Pasuk Lamed Aleph is telling me his mother is Namaha Ammonis and Aviyam became king. In other words, despite the fact that she's still alive when her son died and she should have been destroyed, but the fact that she saw her grandson occupying the throne, that gave her some element of consolation. Maybe. Now, I want to talk about just one brief halachic issue, and then we'll... what do you have to be? What qualifications do you need to be a Jewish king?
Davidic lineage?
Davidic lineage, okay, so Rechavam has that. But the Pasuk says, Som tosim alecha melech, mikerev achicha tosim alecha melech. Mikerev achecha tosim alecha melech. Appoint a king, what's mikerev achecha? So the Gemara says, from amongst your brothers, it has to be mimuvcha sheba achecha. It has to be that the king is someone who is of choice lineage. That means someone who is a descendant of a ger cannot be king. Why not? Probably because, again, the Pasuk says so, that's why not. But probably the reason why you can't be king if you're a descendant of a ger is because the idea of a king is that people should respect him. And people usually respect people who come from, again, America might have a different tradition than like the rags to riches tradition, but usually people respect a leader because, you know, I'm always have the stiff upper lip.
Yes.
You know, that's why you respect it. There's some, and I come, I am so-and-so the 17th. Right? Okay, got it. Right? Worse than Louis XIV, worse than Louis XV. Got it. But the fact is, Mikerev Achecha is a halacha that is in place that we're supposed to respect the king. Tosfos discusses, Tosfos on in Sota, Mem Aleph Amid Beis, on the second, on the fourth sheet. The Gemara says that Agrippas was a king, and Agrippas one time at Hakel, you know, this is a Hakel year, right? Lubavitchers are very into Hakel, they love it, huh? Right? It's like the Rebbe used to make a big deal about Hakel, but it's a mitzvah even if you're not Lubavitch. So Hakel, the Torah says that the king is supposed to read, and only kings from the house of David could read sitting down. Other kings have to stand up. So far so good. Agrippas HaMelech one time goes to read, and he comes to the pasuk of Mikerev Achecha Tasim Alech HaMelech, only appoint a king who has good yichud. By the way, Agrippas is not authentically Jewish. He's a descendant of converts, no? His name doesn't even sound Jewish. Agrippas, no? So, Agrippas is reading, and he starts to cry. And the rabbis turn to him, and they say, Agrippas, don't worry, right? Achicha ata, you're our brother, you're our brother. The Gemara says that also hayom nischaibu zonei shayso kloya, that's the day that the Jewish people were declared to be destroyed, because there's an element of chanifa here. Chanifa is obsequiousness, also known as kissing up, right? What they did is they said, oh, Agrippas, you're a great guy, but he's really not such a great guy. He's really not allowed to be king, and they're kissing up. Right? By the way, Moshe Feinstein has a few tshuvas about what are the parameters of kissing up in halacha. No? Am I allowed to give an aliyah to somebody who is not fully observant because I know that that person is going to make a substantial donation to the shul? or we hope the person make a substantial donation, am I allowed to do it? Is that kissing up? If I give someone undue honor, that might be kissing up, and that is forbidden in halacha. So that's the discussion. Now, the Rashi over here says that the reason why they were obligated, Nischaivu Sonen Shal Yisrael Kloy, the reason why the Jewish people deserve to be destroyed when they praise the Agrippas, Rashi says is because it's Zila Buhumilsa. It's degrading. Rashi holds that technically speaking, Agrippas was eligible to be a king because his father was Jewish, even though his mother was a convert, but he was still eligible to be a king. That's Rashi's understanding. Tosfos, though, in Sota, disagrees. And Tosfos says that, you know what, when we say that if your father is Jewish and your mother's a convert, that you're eligible for certain positions, and the positions, again, I know this is A, politically charged, B, I also know that it's not the easiest thing to accept, but Tosfos over here is dealing with an issue called Sarara. Sarara is the fact that there are certain positions of leadership that the Rambam Paskins, and it's based on Gemaras, that are limited, that a ger, someone who's a convert to Judaism, cannot occupy certain positions of leadership. Right? The Rambam also says, and this is why it's politically charged, that women, right, melech velo malka, you can have a king, not a queen, and all positions of leadership are supposed to be men, not women, and yes, this is in the news, this is like the big topic that everyone and their aunt is discussing, right? Now, Tosis over here in Sota has a very interesting approach. Tosis says that when we say that you are eligible to be a Jewish leader if your father is Jewish, even though your mother is a convert, you're not called a full-fledged convert if your father is a full Jew. Tosis says that is true only of other positions of leadership. But when it comes to being the king, right? When it comes to being a king, so Tosis says, Melech, here, it's like the, I underlined three lines over here in the Tosis. So, the second line, the third line that I underlined, the third word in, it says, Avo Melech, Chaza Vishana Alav Mikarva Achecha Tasim Alecha Melech, Dekapi Kra, Gabe Melech, Achei Mamish Mikarv Mimutsa, Me Aviv Vimo, Shal Yisrael, Bezuha Isa Chanufa Shamalach Bizroa. Tosfos says that the reason why the Jewish people suffer because they kissed up to Agrippas is because in order to be a king, you have to be both father and mother from the Jews. Right? Both father and mother, not a convert. And Agrippas, his mother was a convert, so he's not eligible to be a Jew, to be king.
David descended from Rus.
David descended from Rus way back when, and there was the whole discussion in the Gemara, what, maybe he's not eligible to be king, and we had a tradition that David was eligible, but he's not a descendant directly of a convert. It's not first generation from convert. David, right, Rus is like eight generations before.
It sounds kind of like the birthing issue.
Right. It sounds like Donald Trump last time around. Right? But the fact is, Tosis is saying that to be a king, you have to have both father and mother born Jews.
That's just one generation.
What? Right, both parents have to be born Jews. If it's further back, that's okay. Now, this of course leads to the question, was Rechavam eligible to be king? Because Rechavam's mother is Naamah HaAmonis. So maybe Rechavam can't be king. So Tosis doesn't address this question directly. I should point out that Tosis elsewhere, Tosis in Yevamos, in the parallel Tosis, says that, you know what, Agrippas really was eligible to be king. Rechavam was eligible to be king, Tosis says. To be a king, all you need is that your father is a full Jew. Right? Even if your mother's a convert, that's good enough. Obviously, if your mother is not Jewish, you can't be king, right? That's a given. You have to be Jewish. But, okay. Now, that issue, by the way, is probably very relevant for the whole discussion that is up in the news now. Everyone asks, the Rambam says, Melech v'lo Malka, king, not queen, for all positions of leadership. everyone asks that if you look in the sources, in the Midrashei Halacha, Malach Flomalka is only about king, not queen, in terms of the head position. But who says any position of leadership is removed from women? The Rambam says it, but where does that come from? If you get beneath the hood of this issue, this seems to be the dispute between the two versions of Tosus. Tosus in Yevamos is saying that the rules of leadership are not different for a king than any other position of leadership. And if you're eligible to be a leader because your mother, because your father is Jewish, even though your mother's a convert, therefore you could even be a king. But Tosus in Sota is saying that to be a king has a higher standard. So part of the conversation is, right, do we assume there's a different standard of leadership for king, right, and for other positions as well? I am not going to comment more on this now because nothing good could come of it. But it happens, again, I spoke about this one year on Shavuos. It happens that this issue of Srara, whatever we say about it, it's a real issue. Like, it is a Rambam that is accepted by many other Rishonim. Some Rishonim disagree with the Rambam, but many Rishonim accept the Rambam. What most Rishonim hold, it really depends how you count. It's not the type of issue that we can dismiss easily, because it is a Rambam. On the other hand, it's not unanimous among Rishonim. On the third hand, which I think I ran out of hand, it's also that I don't really understand. Given the world that we live in, right, to say that women and gerim cannot occupy, and by the way, it's not only women and gerim, any person who's considered to be, you know, pardon, of a lower caste.
What the hell is a lower caste?
I don't know, but
besides gerim and women,
Mamzerim is included. People, there are, again, we don't understand this. Hey, Frida, I believe me, I...
It's enough already with the Garam and the women and Mamzerim. We're going to find some more castes that are...
I don't know. I don't think so. I mean, again, the Mishnayos do speak about 10 different classes of Jews. There are 10. There's Kohanim, Levim, Yisrael, Gerim, there's Avodim, Freed Avodim, etc. There are, again, now, not every... Well, yes, but again, the problem over here is that we have something that's on the books that we don't understand.
There's stuff that's on the books that we fixed, but we've discussed that before.
Yeah, but this is something that it's not a simple issue. My understanding is that we can't just dismiss things easily. We can't. As much as on a certain level I think we'd want to. But we have to deal with the tradition and the sources based on what they are. That, again, obviously I don't want to say more like I gave that first introduction. So now, the Noda B'Yehuda deals with the question, so how could Rechavam be king? And the Noda B'Yehuda answers in a very interesting shuva over here that the halacha is that you can't appoint a king from a, pardon the expression, lower caste. But if you are Rechavam, the son of Shlomo, who is inheriting the kingdom, so therefore you can be a king even though you are not Mimuvchar Shebachecha, because the appointment was not to you. This leads the Minchas Chinuch to say, maybe halachically you can have a queen, just you can't appoint a queen the first time. Maybe Melech Velo Malka means that the beginning of the line has to be a male, right? But if subsequently, this is a discussion in the Minchas Chinuch, which is an open question there in Mitzvah Tov Tzadi Zayin. Again, these are some of the issues. Then the Noda B'Yehuda has a line towards the end of this, the second part that I underlined in Noda B'Yehuda. He says, well, who says Na'amah HaAmonis herself was a convert? Maybe Na'amah HaAmonis was the daughter of a convert. Right? And, of course, it solved the entire issue. Fine. So far, so good. So what we have over here, just to go back, is we have a king named Rechavam. Sefer Melachim describes King Rechavam as being not particularly good, right? In fact, I would say bad. And the sins that are described are sins of Avodah Zarah. even though he's in Yerushalayim, there are sins of Avodah Zarah. Let's briefly, because time is late, go through the Psukim in Divrei Hayomim, which is the parallel to what we just learned. We learned 10 Psukim, but in Divrei Hayomim we have, 40 or so. Let's say the same thing as it says in these 10, but it also says a lot more, and we get a different impression of Rechavam than we get here in Sefer Melachim. Okay? First of all, Divrei Hayomim, I'll let you go through the Psukim quickly. It's on the sheets. Divrei Hayomim 2, Divrei Hayomim Beis, Prakim Yud Aleph, and Yud Beis. There's a lot more here in Divrei Hayomim, no? Divrei Hayomim first gives us a straight narrative about Rechavam. It begins with when Rechavam becomes king and Shmaya tells him not to fight against Yeravam, etc. And then it says about how Rechavam built lots of cities, no? Building cities is always a good thing. We want to build the land of Israel. And tells us all the cities. And Rechavam not only builds cities, he strengthens fortresses. And Rechavam has lots of shields, etc. And he has the people of Yehuda and Binyamin. And not only the people of Yehuda and Binyamin, but the Kohanim come and they join with Rechavam. Because since Yeravam appointed his own group of priests to serve on his altars, so the other Kohanim all went to the people of Yehuda, all went to Rechavam's kingdom, and the people who really liked God went to Rechavam's kingdom, and the kingdom became very strong, and Rechavam marries women and has enough children, no? And everything is really wonderful, no? Isn't everything really great about Rechavam? And then it comes to pass, this is the top of page 3, right? He decided to leave the Torah. But this did not happen right away. This happened when his kingdom was strengthened. Apparently, and the Malbim has this commentary in Divrei Hayomim, the entire time that Rechavam is worried that Yeravam is going to attack him, so Rechavam is a good, loyal boy. Then when he realizes that now my kingdom is strengthened, now I have lots of cities, I have powerful forces, so now Rechavam is not scared anymore. So now Rechavam leaves God. And then, that's when King Shishak invades, and we see a tremendous army that Shishak has, right? He has 1,200 chariots and 60,000 horsemen, right? And he captures a few cities. And then the Navi comes to Rechavam. And the Navi says, God said, because you deserted me, so I'm going to forsake you and give you over to Shishak. And then the Jewish people, Vaykanu Sarei Yisrael v'Hamelech, and they said, Hashem is righteous. They do tshuva. And Hashem sees that they humbled themselves. So Hashem says, you know, I'm not going to destroy them because they humbled themselves, etc. And then it says that Shishak took the treasure houses and he took the golden shields, the same thing that we had earlier. Now, the difference between the presentation in Melachim, where Rechavam is all bad, and the presentation in Divrei Hayomim is huge. Divrei Hayomim gives us a really nice image of Rechavam. Yeah, he made a mistake. He left God. But then he's attacked, and he does tshuva, no? It's the same story in terms of Shishak taking the stuff away, but the thrust is very different. The thrust is really very different. at the end it says that Rechavam did some bad again, but the bad, it sounds like that his heart was not completely with the Lord. Now, that type of bad is not really bad. Right? That's very far from Avodah Zarah. And in fact, most striking of all, there is zero reference to Avodah Zarah anywhere in Divrei HaYamim. The stuff that he did bad is that he didn't serve God with all his will. Right? He probably davened mincha without kavanah. Okay? Got it. Right? That's what he did bad. It's not nearly the same as Sefer Melachim has. What can we make of this? So, the theory goes, and Alex Israel has this in his introduction to the book. The theory goes like this. Sefer Melachim and Sefer Divrei HaYomim are two books that tell the same story, but they are taking different perspectives. Who's the author of Sefer Melachim?
Yirmiyahu.
Very good. And most people don't know that. Right? Yirmiyahu HaNavi wrote Sefer Melachim. The Gemara in Bava Basra, Daf Yudalet, where the Gemara talks about who wrote which book.